Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks, 200 stations coast to coast, on Sunday, April 26th, 2015. This is episode 1182. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/techguy and entering the promo code techguy. And by Pro Flowers. Mother's Day is May 10th, and Pro Flowers has got you covered. Get one dozen rainbow roses in a free glass vase for just $19.99 plus shipping. Visit proflowers.com, click the microphone in the top right corner, and enter the offer code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, and smartwatches. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can Skype us if you're outside the country, and that'll be toll free as well. 888-827-5536. So, day two, Apple Watch. Day two, my wrist held hostage. I've been wearing it, so I got it Friday. Talked a little bit about it yesterday and today. I think that what we were all hoping. By the way, excuse my voice. I'm getting over a cold. I think what we were all hoping is that Apple would have kind of, as they have in the past, solved in some subtle and brilliant way the issue of wearables. What is the issue of wearables? Well, the issue of wearables is we like the idea, you know, the computer has slowly been shrinking. We like the idea of carrying a computer in our pocket. And Apple did solve that issue with the iPhone because they figured out, forget keyboard. You put that on screen. In fact, let's make that screen just one big glass screen, as big as we can. So that you can use multi-touch to interact with it, and that will give you usability at a small size. Power has increased, the amount of memory, the amount of capabilities of these processors has increased as it does in technology, doubling every 18 months. And so by now, you're carrying the equivalent of a Cray supercomputer in your pocket, literally. Literally, the Cray supercomputer of 20 years ago in your pocket. Same amount of memory, storage, processor speed, teraflops. That's a common measurement of supercomputers. Billions or trillions of floating point instructions per second. All in the palm of your hand. So they did kind of solve that one. And lots of credit to Apple because smartphones, they did not invent the smartphone, but they perfected it in 2007 and in subsequent years. Of course, Android came out very shortly thereafter. Google, I think safe to say Google was inspired by, an homage to, the smartphone. And Android's been improving and improving and improving. So that's been solved. But the problem with wearables is a much more challenging problem because whether it's on your wrist or in your eyeglasses and a hat, if you're wearing a computer, user interface problems, of course, are much more challenging because the screen's tiny. Voice control becomes important. There are lots of challenges to making it usable. And frankly, most wearables, all wearables that I know of right now, almost all wearables, not all, but most wearables require an attached computer, in this case with the Apple Watch, iPhone 5 or later, connected via Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. So, basically the wearable becomes an extension of the pocket computer. And I had hoped, it's fine. The Android Wear watches, the Pebble watch, the Samsung Gear watches, these were all early watches that came out before Apple did, and they all had the same kind of fundamental issue. They were good for, they were a pedometer. Yeah, that's nice. It was, you know, it gives you notifications. Your calls come in. It says, hey, somebody's calling. It buzzes you. That kind of thing. You can look at your wrist instead of taking out your phone. If you want to answer the call, on most of these, you have to take out the phone. Not the Galaxy Gear, not the Apple Watch. You can actually answer the phone on your watch. You're not going to want to very often. If you do answer the phone, you're not going to have long conversations. It'll be more like, I'm busy right now. Can I call you back? But you can do that. My phone has rung several times in the last couple of days. And while I could look at my watch, I do hear the phone ringing and buzzing in my pocket. And if I want to talk, frankly, I'm going to pull the phone out. And I did. So the interface is tiny, teensy weensy. So that makes it not usable for many things, although there are people making games that work on the watch. I think it's really mostly notifications and the pedometer. Apple has improved it kind of incrementally, but they haven't solved it. And this is what we were hoping for, I think, is that Apple would come up with, oh my gosh, they're brilliant. You know, they've figured it out. The same way multi-touch solved the pocket computer issue. But the digital crown, which I guess is Apple's multi-touch, yeah, it's a dial. Do we want to go back to knobs and dials? This watch has more buttons than an iPhone. It has a home button and a dial, and the dial can click, and it's got touch. So it's they're trying to solve it. Have they made a nice looking watch? Yeah, I think they have. I think it is nice. It's probably nicer looking. The Pebble Steel's pretty good looking. I think the Moto 360 is pretty good looking. It's maybe, and again, slightly better. So it's slightly better than the other stuff in terms of looks, in terms of usability. But it's not a revolution, and that's, I think, a little bit of a disappointment. It's just at the end of the day, it's just another smartwatch, and an expensive one at that. Most of the people that I know who have been very excited about this, some of them, crazy Apple fanatics, kind of have had the same reaction. I don't see anybody jumping up and down. So what's my advice? Well, if you haven't bought one already, and anybody who's an Apple fanatic or an iPhone fanatic will have at least considered and maybe will have bought one. If you haven't bought one already, I would wait. You know, there'll be another one next year. Maybe they'll come up with something then. If you don't wear a wristwatch today, you're not going to want to start wearing a wristwatch. This is just going to accumulate dust on your dresser because it's a wristwatch, and it's a fairly heavy one at that. You know, it's kind of big. It has to be. It has to hold a battery and a microprocessor and RAM and, a watch face and all that. As far as I'm concerned, I'd like it. I would wear it. I like smartwatches. I've been wearing a Moto 360 for 7 months. I like them. I think what's going to come down to is which platform you prefer, Android or iOS. If you're an iOS fan and you think you might want an extra little notification doohickey on your wrist, great. You know, they made Apple. What I think the thing I come away with on this is how good Apple's marketing is. The watch buzzes. The watch has a vibration. Everything does, right? Everything vibrates. But no, with Apple, it's the taptic engine that will tap your wrist. And, you know, I thought I bought it. Oh, cool. It's going to tap my wrist. That's interesting. It's a buzz. It's nothing magical. The description is magical, but it's nothing magical. It's beautifully made with industrial processes that honor the materials. It's just a watch. It's a nice watch. It's not a Patek Philippe. It's not a Tag Heuer. It's a nice watch. It's a geeky watch, right? That's what Heather Hammond, my phone ranger, says. It's a geeky watch. Not a gorgeous watch. It's a geeky watch. So I think what you really see is the amazing ability of Apple's marketing and people like Johnny Ive to articulate a vision and convince us all that they have done something truly remarkable, when in fact it's just another watch. It's not truly, it's not magical. It's not. I'm here to tell you, yeah, it buzzes, it beeps, Mickey's foot taps. It's a watch. It's a watch that has notifications. It's got a pretty good pedometer. In fact, I kind of like it for an exercise watch. If you are, and this is who does wear watches, is runners, people who want to measure heart rate or want to measure steps. For that audience, the $350 sport watch is probably a good idea. You could put music on it. You don't need to have your phone next to you. It does seem, I bicycled in this yesterday, and it recorded that all, how many miles, how my heart rate was, with accuracy. So it's a great pedometer. But nothing that you're going to, no fear of missing out here, folks. Seriously. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I do like to move it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And if you don't move it, every hour your Apple Watch will say, stand up. You haven't stood up. Stand up. Sorry. I think that's funny. If you want a nanny on your wrist, you're going to love the Apple Watch. Heather Hammon is the nanny on our phones. She's our phone ranger. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning.
How are you today? I'm sorry about my cough.
I
feel fine, but I sound like I'm a little bit gravelly.
Well, I just feel bad for you.
Well, fortunately, we have a double pane of glass between us. I can't cough on you.
Yeah. But I'd like want to bring you some honey or something.
Honey, I know. I know. John brought me some honey.
Okay.
He's brought me some Fisherman's Friend.
There you go.
So you have been lining up wonderful callers for us all morning.
Oh, you bet.
And who should I talk to first?
You're going to love Juliet in Fullerton, California.
Oh, I hope you're right. Thank you, Heather. Hello, Juliet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh. Hey, this is Juliet.
Hey, Juliet. What can I do for you?
Oh, I just wanted to let you know that you are my radio celebrity crush.
Oh, isn't that nice? Wait till you see me. Your crush will go away.
Well, I've never seen you, but it's
that's why.
Nice. You have a smile in your voice.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah, I was taught that in radio school. Always smile while you're talking. Then you sound like you have a smile in your voice.
Awesome. So, okay, here's my question.
What happens? I'm going to frown. Does it sound like I have a frown in my voice? Do I sound really?
It does.
Isn't that interesting?
The theater of mine
is true. What can I do for you, Juliet?
Okay, so I'm a drama teacher.
Oh, neat.
I sometimes need my kids to be able to project. And so I'm wondering if there's an app that you can use, like on a smartphone, that would utilize the sound technology in the phone already to project the voice out. And it might be useful for people that are also, like, giving speeches.
So you imagine, like sitting out in the audience with a sound pressure meter on your phone and saying, I can't hear you, and project out more, something like that?
Well, no. Talking into the cell phone.
Yeah.
And the cell phone using the volume to project your voice out louder.
Oh, like an amplifier.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. So instead of projecting, you're just going to use the phone to make them louder.
Yes.
Ah. Well, there might be. The natural thing I think of is feedback, that if your phone is both the microphone and a speaker at the same time. In fact, your phone, kind of transparently, avoids that by muting the speaker when you're on a speakerphone and talking and going back. So you want a cell phone megaphone.
Yes, and you're the tech guy. And so you should tell me.
Cell phone. Well, let me search. Cell phone megaphone. What an interesting idea.
If there's somebody out there, there's an app.
There should be an app for that. The mini voice amplifier microphone megaphone loudspeaker. How about that? It is. This is a device you attach to the smartphone. You don't want that.
Well, that's not good enough. I need it like on the fly.
That's
not
good enough. Does it have to be iPhone or Android? Do you care?
Well, personally, every student coming through the ranks has iPhones.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I'm really puzzled by, actually, Android does outsell iPhone, but that's only because we include global sales in countries where they can't afford iPhones in many cases, so they have Android phones because they're cheaper. But here in the United States, it's almost 50-50. It's neck and neck. Although, I don't know why, because I never see anybody with an Android phone. Ever. Everybody's got an iPhone.
No, I know.
What is that all about?
Well, think about all the times you've been in a, I don't know, any kind of, you know, person giving a speech or whatever. We can't hear them. If you could just grab your cell phone and...
Here's Megaphone from Rubber Big Pepper. It is a megaphone for Android. Sorry. Let's ask the chat room, though. They're super smart. I need an iPhone megaphone. I can see the problem right away of feedback. Even a megaphone has that issue, doesn't it? iPhone megaphone.
Well, as a tech guy, can't you fix
solve that?
solve the feedback problem? Come on.
There is an app at $1.99 called Megaphone by Smudge Apps. Transforms your iPhone into an instant microphone PA system. That's what you want, isn't it?
Yes.
It's really simple. If you're you know what? I'm going to download it right now because I don't want you to have to spend $1.99 because I know teachers are underpaid. So let me download this and install it.
But all for the children.
We do it for the kids. What grades do you teach?
Middle school.
Oh my goodness. Now wouldn't it be better just to teach the kids to project louder? They're shy, aren't they?
Oh, no, they're not shy. And middle school drama is redundant, after all. But...
they are dramatic inherently.
Yes. But I'm just saying, I'm teaching them to speak in public.
Yeah.
And if we could use technology to help us...
Sure.
...not have to yell or whatever the case...
Right.
...at times, this would be... a good thing. And think about all the business people that would use this. Think about all the people that...
Let me try it here. This is Megaphone. All right, I have it on. Megaphone would like to access the microphone. Okay. And now, how does this work? When I press the button, is it going to... Hello, this is Leo speaking to you on my Megaphone. Well, that didn't do anything, did it? Hello?
You didn't even sound that...
I didn't even sound anything. Smudge Megaphone... I don't know. It seems that it doesn't do anything.
Well, you paid $1.99.
Thanks for spending $1.99. Here is an app that not only that, it comes in upside down. Step one, turn your phone upside down. Oh, it does that on purpose. The bottom is where the microphone is. Step two, plug some speakers into the headphone jack. Well, that's no good.
Well, it's better than nothing.
You'll have to play. You could probably do this with a Bluetooth thing. Here, let me plug in some speakers into the headphone jack. And where does that come up on the board? Does it come up on the board? Maybe it doesn't. I need speakers. Is that it?
Hey, Leo, next time you have a public speaking engagement, you don't need to have a microphone.
I project, Juliet. I can talk loud. Because I'm a trained professional. But let me thank you, by the way, for being a drama teacher. Because, all right, you want to turn it up? I'm ready. Here we go. Here comes my megaphone. I am now speaking to you. It doesn't do anything. This does have AirPlay. You know, that's kind of cool. So you could AirPlay this to an Apple TV up in the sound booth of your fancy auditorium, and they could put it back through the PA system. There you go. Crazy idea. I don't know. It must be a better way. Thank you, Juliet. Thank you for what you do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I wish I could get a refund on this thing. $2.99 down the tubes. Doesn't do anything. I think Juliet just wanted to say hi. That's what I think. There's an app for that. There's an app for everything. And there is even a megaphone app, which makes absolutely no sense. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Jeff is next. He's in Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Heather, for getting me over to you so quickly. I appreciate it. Yeah, so Leo, I've been a big fan of the Twit Network for a long time. You guys are doing a great job with your network. Really appreciate all the great shows. Reason I was calling today, I've been having an issue with a Samsung S4. I haven't been a huge fan of the phone over the years, but it's doing a is doing its job. I've been looking at the S6. I've heard you seem to like that model. But back to the S4 issue that I've been having.
What are the issues you're having so I can tell you if they go away with the S6?
Yeah. So I've been having some issues with the, probably for the last year and three quarters or so, haven't had any issues with the microSD card. But I've been using a 32 gig and a 64 gig card. And lately, some of the images from the gallery just seem to disappear that are linked to that microSD card. And I've been looking on the online, some forums and such, and it looks like some of the folks have been having issues with this over the years with S3 and S4.
I have not seen that. What do the people say? Are they getting erased? Can you look at the images with a file browser and see?
Yeah, I actually tried to download some of the images off the card last night, and when I plug it into the card reader, it says, "Would you like to format this card?"
Oh,
yeah.
All right. So it sounds like the card's messed up.
Yeah, so I tried a second card, and it seems to be, well, I tried to download some of the images off of that just because I wanted to see if it was an issue with maybe the 64 gig card wasn't compatible with the SanDisk card, and I've used them for years and can't.
You know, I've used SD cards with every Samsung phone I've owned and haven't had a problem, but here's the good news. The S6 doesn't have an SD card slot, so you will not have this problem.
Right, because it actually, when you go to look at the gallery, it comes up with like a lightning bolt on where the image was, and I've actually seen them kind of disappear as I look at the gallery.
Sounds like the card's flaking away, and I suppose it could be the phone that's doing that, but I have not had these kinds of problems. You know, if you search, a number of people called in the last few months saying, I searched Google on Google, and I found lots of people with this problem. You can take any problem that you, even if you make it up and you Google it, and especially with a company that sold tens of millions of devices, you could find five people who've got that problem. It'll seem like, wow, this is a common problem. Doesn't mean it is. I have used SD cards with Samsung phones and not had problems. SD cards do pose some issues for phone operating systems. You might remember when Windows Phone first came out, Microsoft said it doesn't work with SD cards. We have a slot. Don't put one in. And they fixed that finally. And I'm not sure why. I think Samsung decided with the Galaxy S6 to eliminate SD cards and just actually probably for a cynical reason. Because you can buy now a Samsung Galaxy S6 with 64 gigabytes or even 128 gigabytes of storage, but they overcharge you for it. And I think they're looking at Apple, which does the same thing. Apple doesn't have SD card slots in its iPhone. It never has. But they sell a variety of storage options. And generally going from, let's say, 32 to 64 is $100. Going from 64 to 128 is $100, when it only costs them about $20 for the additional storage. And Samsung, I'm sure, is looking at Apple going, how do they make so much money on their handsets? Apple makes more than any other handset manufacturer. In fact, they make, it's estimated, about 80% of all the money spent on phones goes to Apple. They don't sell 80% of the phones. They're high profit, very high profit. Apple's brilliant at that. And one of the ways they make a lot of money is by eliminating SD cards, because you can get those cheap and put one in there and building into the phone. Having said that, I think the operating system might also be happier with having storage that's part of the total storage instead of some separate thing, you know, in effect, a D drive. It might just be that these operating systems work better with that. I don't know. I haven't had any trouble with the memory on the S6. It operates. I bought 64. I feel like that's plenty. Nowadays, we don't necessarily load up our phones with stuff. If you're one of those people that takes out the SD card, puts it into a computer, and puts movies and music on it, puts it back into the phone, well, yeah, then you're probably not going to want to get the S6. Get the Note 4 instead, because that still has an SD card. And you could put a 128 gig card in there. Giving you a lot of storage. But you sacrifice something. You know, all the Galaxies up to the S6 have had kind of ugly plastic peel-off backs so you can get in there. So the battery can't be as big because it has to be enclosed. So that takes up space. You know, it has to have a package. So, you know, Apple, which never offered removable batteries and never offered removable memory, has kind of set the tone on this. And I think other manufacturers like HTC and Samsung are following suit. They're saying, yeah, we want to put a bigger battery in there. We don't want to have a removable battery. We want to have higher profits on memory, Why should SanDisk get the money for extra memory when we could sell it to our customers directly for a big markup? And so that's what they've done. I have not had the problem you're reporting. If it is time to upgrade, and it might be the S4 is a couple of years old now, I would look at the Note 4. Maybe that's too big for you, but I think that's a great phone with a removable back, with a removable battery, with SD card support. The S6 doesn't have any of that. Now, I love the S6. There are some issues. Samsung's kind of notorious for, and I don't know what they're doing, but having their software bog the phone down. And this S6 has two, not one, but two quad-core processors in it. Super fast storage, faster than ever before. This thing is a supercomputer. And yet there's some lag. You'll get situations where you tap an icon, you press a button, and nothing happens for a second or two. That's very annoying, especially on a phone that's super fast. It has something to do, I believe, with the technology Samsung's using to reduce battery consumption and increase speed. And it's these dual-core processors. What they've done, which is unusual, and they make the processor so they can do this, is instead of a single 8-processor chip in there, there's two chips, two quad processor chips in there. One operates at a slower speed, is less capable. One operates at a much higher speed, but chews up battery. And what Samsung does is they use the slowest processor whenever they can. And when you need more power, when you're rendering a slow-mo movie or something, it'll turn on the second chip as well. And you can feel the battery draining because the thing gets hot. You can just feel the juice going out of that thing. You can almost see it. But boy, is it fast. And Anand Tech and others, some of these techie blogs who've done who are kind of chip savvy, have looked at this, and they noticed that there are some issues switching back and forth between the processors, that they haven't quite worked out the firmware. And I suspect that's where the slowdown happens. There's just a little lag in there. Not always. When the phone gets busy, there's lag. I like the S6. It is currently my favorite phone on the market. But we are there. Nothing's perfect, is it? And it's my job to tell you the imperfections. Having said that, I think the S6 is really a beautiful, fast, easy to use. Wish it had better battery life. I'm getting about 10 and a half hours on it, 10 and a half to 11 hours. In my usage, yours, you know, your mileage may vary, but that I can get twice that, for instance, on a OnePlus One. That's because of that extra high-res screen, I think, and the super-fast processors. So the answer is I don't think your problem with the SD card is typical. Even if you find other people who have that problem, I don't think it's typical. It may be something wrong with your phone. It may be the SD cards. It sounds like you use multiple ones. You will not have that problem with the S6. You'll have other problems, but not that problem. 8888 Ask Leo. The website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. If you go there, you can. We put every question. We actually divide the website into days, you know, shows, hour by hour, call by call. So you can go drill down right to this call, for instance. And if you, or last call, if you have a thought or a comment or suggestion, add your comment. That's great. And there's no charge to do this. There's no sign up. I don't want your email address. It's just there for your use. TechGuyLabs.com. You don't have to write anything down. It's all there as you listen to the show. We're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. I'm rocking and rolling. Let's go to James. He is on the line. Oops. No, he's not. Let's go to, I don't think I hung up on him. I just pressed the button. Let's go to Rick in Escondido, California. He's next. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Better now that you're on the phone.
Have you been suffering, my friend?
I have been suffering, and I am getting ping-pong back and forth from Verizon to Apple to Verizon to Apple, and no one seems to have the answer to this question.
The question is,
recently I have updated from a 4S to a 6.
All right.
And on the 4S, I think I stopped upgrading the operating system at 6 because people were saying it just really got low when you went past that point.
Right.
So I got the 6, and I promise you, I configured it exactly the way I had my 4S set up. I don't even have iCloud. I don't even have iMessaging turned back on. But it seems that when I turn on the LTE, my data usage goes through the roof.
Oh, interesting.
Now, yeah, now I understand if you download a 2-meg file on either 3G or 4G, a 2-meg file is a 2-meg file.
Right.
But some people, I've Googled this, some people are suggesting, well, there was a bug in the software, and when you would come home thinking you're on your Wi-Fi, you're really not.
Well, that would be an issue. That would be an issue. If it didn't, and I've seen that happen with all phones, but I've seen it certainly happen with an iPhone, where for whatever reason, maybe your Wi-Fi isn't strong enough, it doesn't switch over to Wi-Fi and continues to use LTE. And the only way to know that, of course, is to look at the top of the phone and see what you're doing.
Right.
There are other things, though, that you should be aware of. And one of the things Apple gives you is a little tool to see what's using all that data. It's in the, I think they do, that's in the usage. For instance, Facebook changed things dramatically to auto load and play movies. And that is an instant, massive increase in data usage. Data usage is really at the, in the hands of the apps. So it's conceivable that you've got some apps on there that are just going crazy.
Yeah, I looked in those, and I'm not seeing, you know, any huge offenders.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's a bug. I mean, I know Apple is one of those companies that if there's a bug, they really don't admit it until they have the fix, and then magically things start working better.
Right.
But one person also told me that, like, YouTube, if you come at YouTube, if it sees you coming at them,
well, it will increase the it will increase the quality automatically, absolutely.
Okay.
So, I mean, and Netflix does that too. As people notice this when they get to these new high-speed connections, they use more data. Well, yeah, because these programs say, oh, I can show now high def. I'm going to start sucking more data. What you should do is go in your settings, go to the cellular setting, and you can – there's a switch for every app that's use cellular data for – and I would just turn everything off, say only use it on Wi-Fi unless you absolutely need it. There are a few things that you might want, like messages, but try disabling cellular data for all these apps and see if that improves it. If there, it's completely possible that there is a bug, but it should show up in the usage statistics. So I, for instance, I'm seeing on system services, I used 4.4 megabytes of push notifications. iTunes accounts use 3.3 megabytes. You can literally go down here and see which Apple system services used how much data. And then you can go through one by one your apps and disable cellular data until you get it down to what you want. YouTube would be a good candidate. You should, and you basically what you're saying is only use YouTube when I'm on Wi-Fi. I see YouTube on my phone has only used 40 kilobytes. That's because I'm almost always home when I don't watch YouTube on the road.
Well, one test that I did is I just went into cellular connections and I turned off LTE, so it's 3G only, and it completely settled down, went back to normal.
Well, that's interesting. I don't know. I don't. You know, 3G is slower, but otherwise not different. I don't – there could be a bug. You're absolutely right. If Apple has a bug, they don't – often they even fix it without telling you they fixed it. You know, it's that's kind of their MO. But I don't know of a bug like that, and I certainly am not experiencing that myself. I have an iPhone 6. In fact, I'm looking at it. So what I would do is I'd go into the settings. I'd look at the cellular section. You can see how much each app has used. The App Store, for instance, for me, has used 139 megabytes of cellular data. That means, obviously, I updated some apps – while I was wandering around instead of when I was at home. You'll see if there are any really, you know, big culprits. Anybody who's using more than a few hundred megabytes. If you see thousands of megabytes, that's one of them. You know, you don't ever want to see that. And then you can disable it. I mean, I think they give you nice granular controls here. You can just flip a switch in iOS 8 that says, hey, you know, I don't want to use 3G for Meerkat. That's, I don't, you know, it should only, by the way, 3G, 4G, it calls it cellular data. So it doesn't make the distinction that you're making. Data's data from its point of view. So I don't know of a big problem, but there are good controls in iOS to let you turn that off. And so what I'd suggest is doing a little diagnostics on your part. I wish you could look at your cell phone bill, but you can't see that. You can't. James in Fullerton, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, James.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Like many of your listeners, there's so many antivirus programs out there in software. I was just wondering, what's the best software for the best price?
What operating system, I guess I should ask? Are you talking?
I have a Sony Vaio with Microsoft Windows.
Which version of Windows?
The newest one. I think it's Windows 8.
Windows 8 comes with an antivirus. You don't need a third-party antivirus.
Okay, and for browsing the internet and stuff,
it's all built in. One thing you can do, and you might do, I think Windows users probably should do, if you're going to use Internet Explorer, is turn up the security settings a little bit in Internet options. Maybe not all the way, but turn them up a little bit. I don't use Internet Explorer. I think that's another thing you can do is use Chrome instead. I think it's more secure. Of course, with Windows, the most important thing is keeping Windows and any program that goes on the Internet up to date. So that means turning on automatic Windows updates. They're on by default unless you've turned them off. Making sure that Adobe Reader, Adobe Flash, if you use these, Java, if you use it, most people don't. If you don't use it, turn it off because that's a big problem. And Internet Explorer, any browsers that you use, are on the automatic update cycle. They get updated automatically because those are the things that are vulnerable, the things that go out on the Internet. Do you use a router?
I use Wi-Fi.
Okay, so that's a router. Right. So anybody who is it's a little dangerous to plug your Ethernet cable into your cable modem or DSL modem because then you're out there on the Internet in public. But if you have something plugged into your cable modem or DSL modem that then is passing on Internet access to multiple devices in your house, a Wi-Fi access point would be one of them. That's great because that's what the bad guys see. They don't see your computer. It's hidden behind the router. The router is what they try to attack, and routers are by their nature firewalls because they're dumb. And so they ignore any traffic that they didn't ask for, and that's exactly what you want. That just bounces off of them like bullets off of Superman.
So don't plug into the Ethernet cable then? Is that what you're saying?
No, you can if it plugs into your Wi-Fi access point.
Okay.
You just don't want to go bare metal onto the Internet. Most people don't nowadays. Almost everybody has a router. If it's just you, your computer, and your cable modem, go out and buy a $40 router and put it in between them. So I'm telling you kind of the basic security things that are most important. And you notice I haven't mentioned antivirus yet.
Right.
These are much more important. Updating regularly, using a firewall or a router, turning on the Windows firewall. Be very careful about, in order to get for a bad guy to get malware on your system, two things have to happen. One, he has to get you to agree to run a program. And usually they'll do this with tricks, social engineering tricks, like calling you up saying they're from Microsoft. Can I work on your computer? Will you turn on automatic access for me? That's one way to do it. Another way is to send you a Facebook message saying you won't believe what you did last night. I got video. Click this link. Don't do that. The other way is to take advantage of flaws in your system. And that's why these updates are so important. These patch the kind of errors in your system that can allow bad guys in. The good news is Microsoft does include an antivirus with Windows now. They call it Defender. For versions prior to version 8 of Windows, you can use Microsoft's Security Essentials. That's free, Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. In my opinion, that's adequate. You don't need to go any farther.
Yeah, the only reason I ask is my trial subscription to Kaspersky Lab. Yeah, it recently.
That's a moneymaker for the company that sold you the computer. They charge Kaspersky or McAfee or whoever a little money to put that trialware on there. Uninstall it. You don't need it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can use Skype to call us. The website, remember this, it's all you have to remember, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Our digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt, coming up in about half an hour. Chris, along with John Miller, who's sitting in our studio today, spends almost every year, right, in base camp at Everest and Kathmandu. He's done it for the last few years. John has spent a lot of time there. We have talked a little bit about John's drone photography of Everest and, of course, this horrific earthquake in Nepal has deeply affected them. So we'll talk with Chris Marquardt, our photography guru, in about half an hour. It won't be just about photography. It'll be about Nepal, the crisis in Nepal. And he has some beautiful pictures of those people who the people who live there, who are just amazing people. And such a tragedy. Even at base camp, I think they said 17 climbers were killed. And we don't know what the death toll is going to be in Kathmandu and Nepal. I mean, just terrific. Horrific. So Chris will come in just a bit, and we'll talk. But first, let's talk to Rick in Torrance. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I got a question that I've been trying to find out answers to for a while, and it seems like each person I talk to doesn't quite know. So you're the genius. You tell me.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. At least right. If I don't know, I'll say I don't know.
I'm an iMac guy, and I've got about 3 or 4 of them within my house that wow. I'd like to be able to, you know, go from one to the other and pick up what I'm doing with either iCloud or iCloud Drive. And my concern is that there's multiple logins on each one. My kids.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Things like that. And I've got.
And Apple has
no. I don't
no,
want them to have anything to do with.
I know. And Apple has no way to merge iCloud accounts. It's kind of a mess, isn't it? I have a similar situation.
If I set up iCloud on my computers, are they going to be able to see the stuff I have on my other computers?
Well, here's how you could do it.
Is it individual logins or is it computer?
Right. No, it's individual logins. So here's how you could do it. You, of course, on each of those iMacs want to have your personal account that they don't have access to, right?
Correct.
And when you log into that account, you can associate that with an iCloud login. So when you log into that account, your iCloud data will be synced to that account. And that will be yours alone. Your kids won't be able to see that.
Okay.
So as long as you have your own login that they can't log into and your own iCloud login that they don't have access to,
mm-hmm.
that data is isolated and safe.
Okay, good.
All right.
Good.
Now, if you share it, of course it's not, and there's all sorts of things you could do to screw that up. But I think that as long as you keep those two separate from anything mm-hmm. the kids are doing. I have a similar problem because my kids, when they were little, I had a iTunes account, and I used that, and I gave them an allowance on that. They bought music on that. But now they're in college, and I had to practically shake my son and say, stop using my iTunes account. You have an allowance. Set up. You're a grown-up now. Time to set up your own account. And similarly with iCloud, and it was a pain because mm-hmm. When he got a new iPhone, he had attached it to my iCloud and iTunes account. Now, you can have separate iTunes and iCloud accounts, and I do recommend that.
Okay. Now, the other question is, now there's not just iCloud, but iCloud Drive. Differences, benefits, I did notice one little comment. It said that if you go to iCloud Drive, you can no longer access stuff that you had on iCloud only or something like that?
Apple should not be allowed to do cloud services. They just shouldn't be allowed to.
Am I better off going with Google?
Much. Drive? Or OneDrive from Microsoft or any of these other solutions, yes.
Okay.
Because Apple has really muddied the waters with this iCloud Drive. Here's one benefit that's a very real benefit with iCloud Drive. This came out with the latest version of Yosemite 10.10.3 and on iOS 8.1 or 8.2. iCloud Drive is particularly useful for photos, the new photo app that's on desktop and on iOS, because it's intelligent. So when you put photos on iCloud Drive, you have a central repository that holds the originals of all your photos, and then it's smart about each device and puts a size-appropriate versions of those photos on those devices. If you let them manage it, for instance, on your iPhone, it won't kill your iPhone storage with all, 20,000 photos you've taken over the last 10 years. It'll put appropriately sized images on there, and it'll make sure you don't use too much storage. So it's smart in that respect. And for photos, I do recommend iCloud Drive. It's unclear to me what iCloud Drive, what the relationship between iCloud and iCloud Drive is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unclear to me. And I you know, I need an expert. The folks at iMore seem to understand this, and I use many of their people on my other shows. We have a show called Mac Break Weekly, and virtually every week I'm saying, "Tell me again, what does this do?" For a long time, the longest time, their advice was don't use iCloud Drive, but it is now out of beta as of the last few weeks. It does work nicely for photos. I presume that it is also their Apple's fix for a very broken system of document storage for Pages and Numbers and Keynote, their office suite. You know, and Pages, if you use Apple's Pages word processor, it can save your documents to iCloud, and you can open them from any iMac or any other Apple device. And it's kind of like Google Drive in that respect. It's kind of a shared storage. I love the idea of keeping data in the cloud. You have multiple computers. It's great to be able to say, oh, I'm going to work on this document over here. Oh, now I want to work it on over there. That's really great. You don't have to put it on a USB drive and carry it over or get it over the network or whatever. So I do like cloud storage. I feel like Google services are much more intelligible. I'm completely unclear on the difference between iCloud Drive and iCloud. And I don't think Apple's done a good job explaining that.
One other question. You're saying you like Apple's version of it for photos.
For photos, it's great.
Is that only because of the iPhone? Because I'm an Android phone person.
Yeah, you don't get any Android benefit. In fact, in that case, if
just
you want...
stick with Google.
Stick with Google.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're using an Android phone, you get no benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So use Google Plus, and that's what I do. When I take a picture on any of my phones, it's Android or iOS, it goes to Google Plus. It's available then on all my devices, and I like that.
Okay, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thank you for the call. I hope I have, and I hope I haven't got it wrong because it is not clear. It is not clear. The good news is companies that do understand cloud services like Microsoft and Google offer similar services very inexpensively, and I think they're a great choice. iCloud and iCloud Drive, what's the difference? Why use one or the other? I don't even understand. I think for photos, if you use photos on iOS and on OS X, as I do, that's a great solution because it's intelligent. It just works. Most of Apple's other network stuff, you know, cloud stuff, just doesn't work. 8888 Ask Leo. I know it's all very confusing. Cloud's confusing, but conceptually the idea is you and we, and this is the case for many of us, we now use multiple computers. Maybe there's one at work, one at home. Maybe you've got a laptop. Maybe you've got a smartphone. And wouldn't it be nice if the same, all your documents were available in all of those platforms so you could work on any of them in a way that's appropriate to that platform? That's the idea of cloud, and I like it for that reason. And you could keep a local version. Google Drive lets you back it up locally, so you have a local version as well as a cloud storage version. And they're kept in sync. All of that just makes sense to me. And as soon, I think Apple is kind of starting to get around to getting this to work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. Star is on the line from Lomita,
hello.
California. Hi, Star.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I recently just purchased a Westinghouse L something D TV. And
yay.
We just have like the basic antenna. It's an RCA, just a black, like 8.5 by 11 thing.
Really? You got like rabbit ears?
No, we don't have
it's a square. It's a square.
Okay, yes, it's square. It's kind of...
it's not on the roof. It's like on the TV?
Well, no, we purchased it and you plug it in. It's got a little...
Yeah.
Thing, you screw it on.
Yeah.
But the
it's
channel
a, that's a
di- not coming in.
Yeah, that's a digital antenna, I think. So, which is good because all the TV stations went digital. So,
okay.
And how does it connect to your TV?
Just that little screw thing.
The little screw thing.
Screw it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a little, like a needle type thing in the middle and screw it in.
Yeah, we call that coax. Short for coaxial. Antenna. So,
okay.
So over the air television, if you are close enough to the big antennas, where the, you know, and that means if you're close enough to the big city, is the best deal in television. It's free.
Right.
It's high def. But you need a couple of things. You need a digital antenna and a television that understands the digital signal. I'm presuming because it's a late model television and you got this special. It sounds like the way you're describing it, it sounds like a digital antenna. But
I don't know. Yeah.
It may be, in fact. And so what are you getting? Are you getting any signal or?
Well, my son, since he was desperate to watch the basketball game today, so yeah. He did something because we just keep scanning the channels over and over again, hoping that it'll come
in.
Ever,
so you get nothing or you get like snowy or what do you get?
Well, we get like a partial picture and then it just goes out to blank screen and it's no signal.
So that's digital. And that's how digital works. You know, in the old days, you remember the old days?
Yes.
Yeah. You'd either get snow or you'd get ghosting. You'd get a signal, but it'd kind of be a weak signal or a weird signal. That is in the old days of analog television. And the nice thing about analog is it degrades more gracefully. So you can get kind of a weak signal. But with digital, it either works or it doesn't work. And so that's what's happening. You're right on the edge. Now, there's a few things you can do. There's a website called AntennaWeb.
Okay.
At antennaweb.org, I think. This is created by the Consumer Electronics Association, and it's about what you do is you look up your zip code, and it'll tell you what kind of antenna you need, what kind of signals you're getting, that kind of thing. You may need, because if I don't know how close Lomita is to where the LA television stations are.
Well, we're pretty far. We're near, I don't know if you're familiar with San Pedro.
Yeah.
San Pedro. We're very, you know, very close to that. So we're, you know, way on the other end of L.A.
Yeah. It may be that you're actually too distant and you may need a roof antenna.
Oh, gosh.
I know. Well, what did you do before?
Well, we never had TV before. So we just moved here, and I've always just watched it on my laptop. Like Netflix, really didn't care. But now that my son's home from school, he wants to watch all the sports and all the games, and I don't know if getting an Apple TV type thing or the Amazon.
Well, that's another way you can go is get TV over the internet. Although live sports, maybe yes, maybe no. You'd have to buy a subscription to something called Sling TV, which would give you ESPN. You'd get some live sports that way, but you wouldn't Sling S-L-I-N-G TV. That's a website, and they sell software. But I think the real problem. You know, if he wants to watch the L.A. locals, you know, channel 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, those are not going to be on the internet. You may need to get a better antenna, and it probably has to be either in the attic or on the roof.
Jeez.
I know.
I can't go to Best Buy and say, you know what, give me the best antenna you have. It doesn't work like that.
No, you need to get the right antenna. So go to antennaweb.org and put in your address, and it will tell you. Another great site, and I'm going to say it, but it will be down the minute I say it because it's a little site, and as soon as we send a million people there, it goes down every time, is tvfool.com.
Okay.
tvfool.com. And I actually have a thing. It says see which TV stations you can get on a map. And it'll show you, and then it'll say, well, you're in this area, you're in the gray zone, which I think you are. Sometimes they call it the cliff zone, where you fall off a cliff, and you just don't get it. And you're right on the edge I would guess. You're about 30 miles, I think, from the big antennas.
I think so. Yeah, because even the internet is not that great. I mean, it works, but it's slow. So.
Who do you get your internet from?
Well, I just use my smartphone, and even on my smartphone, it's challenging at times.
You definitely don't want to watch TV on the internet, then you'll use up your bandwidth very
quickly.
Okay.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. So, you can go to AntennaWeb or TV Fool. You can get, you know, some look at a coverage map, see how close you are. It will tell you, no, in Lomita, I bet you it'll say this, but check. Oh, no, you need to put an antenna on the roof, and this has to be such and such antenna, and you need to aim it 38 degrees north and that kind of thing.
Oh, my God. Right, that's how he's watching the game right now. He's holding it like left and the left arm, you know.
Yeah, that's what he's kind of doing. He's aiming it towards there. And if he can get close to a window, it'll work better, right?
Okay, he hasn't tried that yet because we have to move the TV entirely. So. Okay.
Yeah, that's how cable started, you know. In fact, I was just reading an article about Comcast, which started in the 70s, I think in Louisville. people were out. It was like being in the Lomita. You could just barely get the signal. So some bright guy put up a bigger antenna, the kind you would put on the roof, only even bigger, you know, a big tower, and then dug channels with coaxial cable in it to people's houses and said, you're going to hook up to the big antenna, and that's how you're going to get your TV. Of course, cable is a very different system now, but that's where it came from. That's how it worked. Chris Marquardt, photography guru, joins us right after these words. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt is here. He's our photo guy, joins us every week to talk about digital photography. Today, a little bit more of a serious subject. For how many years have you been going up to a base camp in Kathmandu?
I think we've been there 4 or 5 times now over the last... we were there the first time in 2009. So over the last 6 or 7 years, we've been there at least 4 times. And we made lots of friends there. So hearing about the big earthquake in Nepal was really worrying. You know, it's one of these things where I spent so much time, not just for the landscape, not just for the hiking, not just for the photography, but for the people.
Yeah.
And just after the first one, my friend John told me before I got there, you will come for the mountains, but you will return for the people. And that's what we did. And we made lots of friends. And it's a really nice place to take pictures of people because everyone is so open, everyone's so friendly. And Nepal is one of the poorest countries in the world. I mean, it's among the, I think, 20 poorest countries in the world. So this earthquake is pretty devastating. And
7.9
this was
very
a really
strong,
big one.
Very strong.
And, very, very strong one.
In Kathmandu, most of the buildings are brick and tumbled down.
The buildings are brick, and I would say the cement between the bricks is not of the best quality. Yeah. So it's really those are the first buildings that will go in such an earthquake, and you know the buildings, and especially the old buildings, like there's some World Heritage buildings there. There's some old temples and things that have completely crumbled. At this point, I think there's over 2,500 confirmed casualties in Nepal. And
there's not much of a rescue infrastructure there. I mean, it's, as you say, a poor country.
The countries around, I mean, India has sent a lot. There's a lot of help coming in.
Good.
From Europe right now. I think even the U.S. is sending some help there. People can obviously donate. There are addresses. There's one, if I can say it here.
Please do.
There's a page by I think PBI, who's collected like a list of 7 vetted charities to go to. I've set up a shortcut for that. If you go to tfttf.com/Nepal Charities, one word, all lowercase, that'll redirect to that page. And there are...
It would be great if everybody listening gave a buck or two to help out.
These people really need the help right now.
Yeah.
And
you have and we've been for people who are watching our home video, been showing some of these images of the people of Nepal. If you go to tfttf.com/peopleofnepal. Some just beautiful pictures Chris has taken in his many visits. You know, John, I don't know if it's coincidental, but John Miller, your partner, who brought you to Everest first and does, you do the Rest of Everest podcast. He's also, we showed a few months ago his drone images from Nepal. I guess John says that there might be an effort to use drones to do some mapping of the earthquake.
Oh, drones for mapping. Yeah, there are drones for rescue operations that are in use these days, I think. Mm-hmm. So
you, I know, have friends in Kathmandu, and we're singing the praises. Facebook has they set this up. I'm trying to remember when they set this up, and it was after a disaster. I don't know if it was the Haiti quake. But
I don't know when, but people in Nepal, in this area who have Facebook, were actually prompted by Facebook to check in to what they call the Facebook safety check. And people who are friends of people on Facebook, like I have a bunch of friends on there, could then check in and see who of them checked in and who of them was safe. So that was a massive relief to see a lot of our friends kind of check in over the last 2 days. And Unfortunately, there are still a couple missing, so that we haven't heard of. I don't know what's going on. Communications are probably down quite a lot there. Right. Electricity is a pretty rare thing right now, so could be that they can't communicate. But let's just not hope for the worst.
This is a great page to bookmark now. Facebook.com/safetycheck if you're a Facebook member, because if a disaster happens and you log into your Facebook, it'll say, hey, tell people you're safe.
Yes.
And
there's also Google has something similar called the Person Finder. So
yeah.
There are all the different social media are starting to, social networks are starting to pull together the power. And that's a very good thing. I mean, again, I'm singing the praises of Facebook here, which I didn't think I would do, but Facebook has really done a great job there. So kudos. Thanks.
And this is the value of a global network that's truly global, yes. Is that you can do things like this, and it's really great. But again, let's encourage our listeners all over the world to go to this page that you have bookmarked, TTF.com/ what is it? The charity?
The charity, Nepal Charities.
Nepal Charities. You know what? Let's put this all. We'll put all three links, including Chris's beautiful pictures of Nepalese people, in our show notes at techguylabs.com so that people can go there. And we'll also link to the rest of Everest, John Miller's site, so people can
Oh, and you know what? If anyone who's listening to this should know the whereabouts of Krishna Parbatgiri, he's the owner of the Revolution Cafe in Kathmandu. Shoot me an email.
Yeah. Very sad, but a beautiful spot with a very, I think, as you say, beautiful people and a spiritual area.
Wonderful area. Yeah. Lots of Buddhist temples and colorful things. People are very happy there. People are very open. From a photography point of view, it's a paradise. It's really, it's a joy to shoot there. You're greeted with open arms by most of the people.
Yeah.
As you can see in the pictures, I mean, most of them have a smile for you, or some you don't even have to ask. Some just invite you to take the picture because they know that they're doing a good thing.
The seven charities that PRI recommends, I'll give you just if you're listening, you can maybe, if you're already giving to one of them, you just give a little more. AmeriCares, CARE, we're all familiar with CARE, Catholic Relief Services, Direct Relief, Global Giving, Save the Children, the SIVA Foundation, of course UNICEF. Give a lot of money to UNICEF, and that's another place. They're mobilizing an urgent response to meet the needs of children in the affected area. So water purification tablets, hygiene kits, nutrition supplies. Oxfam, which is a very well-known NGO, non-governmental organization, has aid workers on the ground. You can support them as well. So there's some places you can go, and if everybody listening gives a buck or two, that'll make a huge difference in the lives of these people who have been devastated. Terrible quake. Unimaginable. 7.9 in an area that is not well prepared for this. Just terrible. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate your work. I remind people, do we have a new assignment? I don't even remember.
Well, the current assignment is still going on. It's anniversary.
Anniversary, that's right. So there are a few more weeks left on that. If you want to take a picture illustrating the word or concept anniversary, tag it with the word anniversary, upload it to Flickr, and then submit it to Renee and our tech guy group. In a few weeks hence, we'll review some of those images. But for right now, let's focus on the devastation in Nepal. And Chris, my heart and prayers go out to you, your friends in Kathmandu, and I pray that they're okay.
And thanks for letting me talk about it.
Yeah, of course. Chris Marquardt, he's at discoverthetopfloor.com. And I don't know if you'll be doing another Everest trek in the near future. It may take a while for this region to get back on.
Well, I'm actually right now preparing for a tour, a photo tour to India, to an area which is about 250 miles from Kathmandu away. So, which will start in mid-May. And we do have a plan to go to Kathmandu in about a month from now.
Good.
So, no idea what's actually going to happen. Chances are that I will be there in a month from now and hopefully can hug a few of my friends.
DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. We'll put all those links in our show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go from Knoxville, Tennessee. Logan is on the line. Hi, Logan. Logan. Oh, did I? No?
No, I'm here. Sorry.
There he is. All right. Pick up the phone, Logan.
Hi. Yeah, I was just roaming around. Anyway, hi, Leo.
Can you pick up the phone? The speaker.
I have a house in the boonies.
The speakerphone's a little boomy. If you could pick up the phone, that'd be better.
I'm sorry. I'm calling you on Google Voice.
Oh, all right. Go ahead.
I have a house in the boonies, and of course, I can't get broadband here. And luckily, I found a nice guy in the closest town, about 16 kilometers away, where I can get Charter broadband service, and who's willing to let me put a pole in his front yard so I can install a, they call it a long-range wireless access point.
That's cool.
Yeah, it'll be cool if it works.
How far?
They call it 10 kilometers, 16 kilometers or 10 miles.
That's a long way.
It's a long way. And that's why I need your help, because I've done all this research. I can't really nail it down on what type of antennas I need.
Is it Wi-Fi that it's going to use or something else?
I'm gonna send a long wireless Wi-Fi signal from the access point up to my house.
Wow.
And it's line of sight. There's nothing in between for 10 miles.
That's good. Line of sight helps because anything in the way will degrade the signal. So if you can see him and he can see you, that's very good. There are places.
I have binoculars, and I can see right to the guy's front yard.
Good. There are places to go. My favorite is radiolabs.com, radiolabs.com, that make long-range Wi-Fi antennas. And I am not an expert in this, and I know it will be challenging. That is really long. You're probably going to use a highly directional antenna. You might even be using microwave instead of Wi-Fi. If you have line of sight, microwave is actually a very good choice. Okay. Wi-Fi may not be the right choice, but if you go to radiolab.com, you can read up on this, and they'll have some suggestions for you. I think rather than Wi-Fi, which is really not designed for 10 miles, microwave will do this. There are wireless internet service providers that use microwave. MMDA, I think it's, or MMDS, I can't remember. It is a system that does this exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, you a little research on this, but that's great. I mean, it's thrilling that you can use this guy's Wi-Fi. That's nice of him.
Yeah, and the internet speed down there is incredible. It's 60 megs down by 10 megs
that's
up.
That's great. What are you using now? Because you're on the internet if you're using Google Voice. Are you using your phone?
It's a remote location, so I'm in California, but this is
a location
back there.
I get it. All right.
There's nothing up there. It's on top of a mountain in the middle of nowhere.
The chat room's coming up with all sorts of ideas. We have a lot of hams who listen to the show, and they're of course antenna experts. The chat room has a lot of good ideas. So what we're going to do is, I would start with Radio Labs, but I would also visit the website techguylabs.com and look at your call, because people will put that information in the show notes as they come up with Ubiquiti, and there's a bunch of other choices that are designed for this kind of thing. You need a lot of power to go 10 miles, and it's got to be both ways, right? Because you don't want to just receive. You've got to send. Internet only works in a two-way situation. UBNT.com, Air Fiber. These are a bunch of different solutions for a 10-mile wireless internet. It can be done. You got the money anyway. It can be done. Steve is on the line from Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I was moving out to my own apartment for the first time. And
congratulations. How exciting.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But I was wondering, what kind of speed should I be looking for on my internet?
As fast as you can afford.
Okay.
So I presume one of the things you're going to want to do is watch Netflix and other movies and things like that over the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
And the only other thing I have to worry about is my roommate's going to be playing a lot of video games.
Oh, man. Those darn roommates. Well, video games, if he's playing like Call of Duty against other people on the internet, that's not a huge amount of bandwidth. Really, the Netflix is really a big one. They have a ISP speed index, which is great. You can actually look at the speed. It's ISP speedindex.netflix.com. Look at the speed of different internet service providers, so you can see in your area what ones provide the service that Netflix recommends. And Netflix, and this, by the way, Netflix information would apply to Amazon streaming, to using iTunes, any, and you know, Roku, any of your streaming stuff, even for other service providers. Netflix says if you want HD quality, you need 5 megabits per second download. That's not that much. Nowadays, that's that's pretty doable. If you want the ultra-high def that they offer for some of their shows, the 4K, that's 25 megabits per second. That's a little steep. I think if you get, are you? What are you looking at? What are your options out there?
I only get Comcast.
Okay, that's good news. Comcast, as much as I give them a hard time, does provide very fast internet service, and they have a number of tiers, so you can get faster or slower depending on your needs and your budget.
Right.
I presume roommate's going in on this with you, right?
Oh, yeah, I can make him pay half.
So I would say, given that he's going to play video games, make sure he's not running a BitTorrent client and uploading and downloading stuff at the same time. It's very easy. It's very easy to swamp a internet connection if you're doing that kind of thing. But if he's playing video games and you want to watch Netflix, 10 megabits per second should be sufficient.
Oh, that's it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and you'll probably get with that, you'll get 10 megabits down, 1 or 2 megabits up. You do need some upstream. For instance, if you want to use Skype to call mom and dad, and I hope you will on a regular basis.
Of course.
Yeah. Set them up with Skype. It'll make them feel much better when they do see you. Things like that will make require upstream, and so I think a couple of megabits is nice. What are the tiers? Have you actually looked at what Comcast is offering?
Yeah, it has a 6 megabyte, 25 megabyte, 50, and 100.
Okay, so 25 would be great. That would be more than adequate. 6 might be a little stretching. I wish they had something in between. Is the 25 affordable if you split it with your roommate? Say again.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh good, go for the 25.
Cool. Thank
you. All right. Hey, enjoy your new place. That's exciting.
Well, this
big, big step. And by the way, I'm glad, you know, the kids know this. Very important when you look at a new place. What kind of internet can I get? Very important. How much is that going to cost? Very, very important. Check that out. Remember though that if you're in a congested area, an area where, and probably you are, it's an apartment, it's probably in an area where a lot of other people are, that Comcast is telling you the top speed at 25, not the bottom speed, and it can get slower, especially in the evening in prime time when all your neighbors are also watching Netflix. I think Comcast has gotten a lot better in that regard. It used to be kind of an issue, but I feel like they've kind of handled that, knowing that that's what people want. Hey, we're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. We got another hour to go, though. Lots more to come. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you've got a question or a comment or a suggestion, call 8888-ASK-LEO. How's your mattress? How you sleeping these days? You want a new mattress? If you're moving out into your first apartment, oh, isn't that neat? Henry did that this year, right? His first apartment. We sent him a Casper mattress, Casper.com. Casper is a great way to get a great mattress at a very good price. And you might say, well, I'm not going to buy a mattress on the internet. What if I don't like it? No problem. You have 100 days to return it free. What? Yes. Casper.com. So here's the deal. Casper uses modern technology, memory foam and latex, to make mattresses, premium mattresses in the U.S., They then somehow magically, using a special machine, compress them into a box that you can carry upstairs and everything. Chad's getting a Casper mattress for his new apartment, too. This is a great solution. We got Casper, and we love it. It's very comfortable. Very comfortable. And it kind of, I don't know how they do it, but they combine both firmness and softness for a better night's sleep. And with 100 days to try before you buy, that's good. Get your Casper mattress right now. $500 for a twin, $950 for a king size. That's amazing price. And made in the U.S., I like that. Very comfortable. If you go to casper.com/techguy and use the promo code techguy at checkout, you'll save another $50, which gets you really a good price now. $50 off. Use the offer code techguy at casper.com/techguy. Very comfortable mattresses. And because they eliminate the showroom,
They can sell to you at factory direct prices. And you have 100 days to change your mind. Casper.com/tech guy. A bed that loves you back. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and smartwatches and smartphones and home theater and digital photography, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also call via Skype if you're outside the U.S. and Canada, and it shouldn't cost you anything. 888-ASK-LEO. We go back to the phones, and Emily is in Orange County, California. Thanks for hanging on, Emily. Leo Laporte.
Oh, thanks, Leo. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.
Okay. We have a relatively new LG 55 TV. And, of course, you know, the sound. We're not audiophiles, but we'd like a better sound to it. And
yeah.
So I'm calling you to find out what you might suggest. We're not into real high price, but not real inexpensive either. You know, whatever you suggest.
So the TV sound is not very good. They put speakers on the TVs mostly because people would be very angry if they didn't. But really, it's not good, is it? And especially if you have a big screen, high def TV, which you do, you kind of want to recreate a movie experience, and that means surround sound. Now, you could, and I'm going to tell you something that's affordable and simple. You could go out and get an AV receiver. Sometimes they call these systems home theater in a box systems that include a Blu-ray DVD player that has outputs for a 5.1 surround sound system. And then connects up to your TV. And those aren't bad. HTIB, home theater in a box. They range wildly. The idea of 5.1 sound, let me explain what that is. So the theater experience is Dolby surround or THX surround. The idea is that not only do you have stereo, left and right speakers, but you have two left and right surround speakers, which are set back. They're really kind of parallel to your ears as you sit on the couch. And you have a center channel that is right over the TV. That's where the voices come out. And then if you have a 5.1 surround, you'll also have a subwoofer that'll give you some of the rumble. That's going to give you a more accurate theater experience. And if you're watching movies on a Blu-ray player or on Netflix, most of them are surround. So it makes it more immersive when you hear cars go by, not just left to right, but go behind you. And, you know, when I'm watching the ball game, I can hear the guy saying, beer here, get your beer here. And he's coming from behind me. That's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So that can cost you thousands of dollars or not. And I'm going to recommend something that our home theater guru recommends. It's the Andrew Jones sound bar. It's from Pioneer, about $300-$400 maybe. And it's simpler because, as you might imagine, with a 5.1 system, you've got a lot of wires. You got a wire to your center channel, a wire to your subwoofer, two wires to the left and right speakers, two wires to the back speakers. Wow, that's a lot of wires. And then it gets in the way. You got to figure out how to put them. The Andrew Jones is a sound bar,
okay. Which
means it's kind of replacing your TV. Also has, in a way, a sound bar, little speakers underneath the screen. This is going to replace those. It's going to sit right under the screen. And then one other device, which is the subwoofer, to give you the lower bass sounds. Those two together can give you pretty good surround sound using digital technology to kind of throw the sounds around you. Not as well as five speakers would, but pretty well. And they're much more affordable.
Leo, does it come with a subwoofer?
It does. For I'm looking at the one on Amazon, which is the Pioneer. We'll put a link in the show notes. Pioneer SP as in Paul, SB as in boy, 23W. Andrew Jones is a very highly respected sound designer.
Uh-huh.
And Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, highly recommends these. And at $400, you're getting an amazing setup. Yeah.
Leo, can I just confirm that that's S as in Sam, P as in Paul, S as in Sam, B as in boy, 23W?
Yep. You got it.
May I ask you a couple, one more for sure question?
Sure, of course.
Oh, good. Thank you so much for that suggestion. Sounds perfect. Okay, the TV ears, for people who have some you know, sound degrading.
Right, right.
Difficulty hearing. Are they any good?
They're wireless. You have to be facing the TV because they're going through the air via light.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably the best solution. You don't want wired because people will trip over the cordless.
Yes, yes. Are there a few brands out there?
Yeah, there are a number of brands. I don't know what I exactly would recommend. If one of the two of you has worse hearing, it can be annoying. I know when I sit with my mom, she's a little older and a little deaf, and so we have to turn up very loud, and the rest of us are going, I can't, it's too loud. But she hears great. Sennheiser makes a very good set, the
RS-120.
And the nice thing about those, they're not line of sight. They're not infrared. They're RF. They're wireless using radio frequencies. It means you can turn your head. You can actually get up and go to the kitchen, and you'll still be able to hear it.
Oh, that sounds good. Can I ask you one more thing about a car charger?
Okay. Wow.
Okay. Well,
we're going to do a lot of shopping today.
Well, okay, I'm not even on a smartphone. I have a flip phone. As a matter of fact, it's a Sanyo Katana DLX.
Mm.
All right. Well, it's because I have a $15 plan that gives me 100 minutes
nice.
A month. That's all I need.
That's all you need.
Uh-huh. I don't do texting. My kids get mad because I don't. But anyhow, it didn't come with a car charger.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, are they universal or do I need to get...
They're not.
Specific to that model. They're not.
Those older phones, the Sanyos, have a, you know, Sanyo connector that is not like anybody else. All the modern phones, and this actually comes because the European Union has required this, have used micro USB connectors. And so you can easily go to the store and buy a charger that'll work with your cigarette lighter and charges your phone. You're going to have to get one that's specifically for that Katana.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it should be just one that'll fit that one.
Unfortunately, it's got to go for that.
Oh, well,
I'm sorry.
Well. Oh, that's okay. I'm so appreciative for the information you gave me right now. Thank you, Leo.
Nice to have a geek on the line. Thank you, Emily. It's great.
Great.
Great to talk. I like being the house geek for people. Yeah. Remember the bad old days where every phone had a different charger? Hallelujah. Those days are gone. Thank you, EU, that required all cell phones sold in Europe had to have micro USB connectors and charging. You might note that Apple does not. It has its own proprietary lightning charger. But when you buy an iPhone in Europe, they give you a little adapter that makes it work with micro USB. We're still in that situation with laptops, aren't we? Every laptop has a different dongle. And you have to buy, if you got a Dell, you got to buy the Dell power supply. If you have a Toshiba, you got to buy the Toshiba. But those days, I think, are also numbered. There's a new connector. It's called USB Type-C. Very much like Apple's Lightning connector. It's reversible. Not only does it carry power, and enough power, by the way, to charge a laptop, it also can carry video, data, so it's like a regular USB connector. I think it's a great solution. Apple and Google both have released laptops using this USB Type-C charger, and I'm hoping there'll be an avalanche of manufacturers all offering USB Type-C connectors for their laptops. That would be a boon. Then you wouldn't have to buy a proprietary adapter. It would only work. I have Dell's different generations, you know, and I have to get a different adapter for each one. It's crazy, and they're expensive. They're $90. So I'm hopeful this USB Type-C will solve this problem. My Google Chromebook Pixel is great. It has two USB Type-Cs, one on the left, one on the right. Either one will charge the laptop. Apple's new MacBook, same thing. So I hope that this will our long national nightmare will soon be over. It's over for smartphones, thank goodness. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. 888-827-5536. Website, sorry about that. Didn't mean to bonk you in the head there. Website, techguylabs.com. It's free, it's open, it's available for you right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We're talking high tech with John in Anaheim, California. Hi, John.
Hi. Sorry, I need to catch my brain up with what's going on.
I went right to you. It was very sudden. I'm sorry. Let's go to John on the phone. John is calling from
Anaheim, California. Hello, John.
Hi. I'm actually interested in getting into software development, specifically through Python 2.7, thanks to the Linux Ubuntu distribution.
Holy cow, that was a lot of big words. What is soccer? Soccer? What do you mean soccer?
No. Python.
Yeah, but before that you said soccer development.
Oh, sorry. Software.
Software. Oh, okay. That's good. Now I understand. I was stuck on yeah. So what is this you want? First tell me, instead of all those names, what do you want to do? What's your goal in life?
My goal in life is to actually develop space propulsion technologies.
Neat. Well, NASA likes Python. Yes.
Well, actually, I'm more interested in their EagleWorks projects.
Okay. So what can I do to facilitate? Have you done any programming before?
Very little through Python. I'm actually trying to teach it to, I'm actually trying to teach myself how to do it, and I bought several books.
Python is very learnable. In fact, it's one of the languages I kind of recommend for learners. It's what we call a scripting language.
Yes.
Which means that you can go into the Python interpreter and try stuff, like type in 2 + 2 or print hello world, and it'll do things. And that's a great way to kind of get your feet wet. There are some good resources, lots of good resources for learning to program with Python. One that I like a lot is called Think Like a Computer Scientist.
Actually, sorry, I'm multitasking, but your TWIT program, Coding 101,
yeah,
actually helped me a lot.
Good.
And now I'm actually thinking about switching to another Linux distribution, but on a mobile platform, so I can actually work on the go because my job doesn't give me a lot of free time.
Yeah. The truth is Python will work on any operating system. There's Python for Windows, Python for Mac. You can use Python for Linux. It doesn't matter which distribution you use. Your Python's going to be the same across the board. And if it's not, you can update it and install it. It's very easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I tried running it on Android, but it never had the interpreter along with it. There were multiple Python apps.
I don't think you can really program... I've never seen a Python environment for Android. Not to say there isn't one, but generally it's for not for mobile, but for computer. So you don't want to have a laptop. You want to do this on a tablet?
Yeah. Tablets are small, they're compact, and also they're just I can't understand why nobody would go, hey, this is a really functional device. Why not just turn it into a really slick, really cool computer?
You know, it's funny because I often think the same thing myself with my smartphones. Why can't I program on the smartphones? There are Android-specific versions of Python. The problem is kind of the environment, the programming environment. But if you look in the Android Play Store, I guess it's play.google.com, you can see there's QPython. If you go to python-4-android.com, there's a version of Python specifically for Android. So there are choices. Python, for those who are curious what the heck we're talking about, is not a snake. It's a popular programming language. NASA uses it. Google uses it. It's getting a little bit out of favor, as all languages do. There's new stuff all the time. And languages are very much a kind of fashion-driven. Computer programming languages are fashion-driven. Python being pushed aside by Ruby on Rails. You know, if I were going to learn to program all over again, I might look at JavaScript. That allows you to do web-based programming, and there's a lot going on in that area of web-based programming. I think I would probably prefer to program on a laptop with a real keyboard, but if you want to do it on Android, there are versions. Just look in the Play Store. Moving on to Benny in Pasadena. Hi, Benny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hey. Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Very good. What can I do for you?
Well, I was a little alarmed recently. I got an email from Mint.com saying I had a low balance on my checking account.
Yeah.
But you know what I just noticed as I was waiting on the phone here is that the low balance that they said I had I actually did have that low balance, but 2 weeks ago, prior to that email.
Yeah, so Mint, so
email
which is...
came in late, and that's what startled me, thinking like the bad guys are trying to fish
my
password. But it may have been my mistake in that I didn't realize that this came in 2 weeks late.
Yeah, so Mint, I like Mint. Mint is an interesting product. It comes from Intuit. You may remember the name Intuit. They created Quicken, which was the checkbook program for many, many years. In fact, Quicken was so successful, it actually put Microsoft's competing program Money out of business. Microsoft gave up. That didn't happen a lot in the old days, in the 90s and the 2000s. Microsoft didn't lose a lot of battles, but they lost that battle for checkbook software. Intuit was dominant. But you know what? Nobody uses checkbook. Well, I shouldn't say that. Fewer and fewer use checkbook software nowadays. Because it's a lot of work. You got to enter in your, you know, you get your checking statement once a month. I used to do this. Enter in everything. I'm not sure exactly the point. I guess let's make sure the bank didn't make a mistake. Except, you know what? The bank doesn't really make mistakes. They're using a computer, too. So after 10 years of entering data in the checkbooks, I think a lot of people realize there's got to be a better way. And Intuit bought a company called Mint. Mint.com. And Mint's kind of cool. Because it's essentially like Quicken. It does your balancing. You can use it to budget and all that stuff. But you do no data entry because you basically tie Mint into all your accounts, your savings, your checking, your charge cards, your loans. So it knows all that stuff. You don't have to do any data entry. You don't even have to download. Remember with Intuit's Quicken, you'd have to go online if you didn't want to do the data entry, download the statement from your bank, and it'd have to be the proper format, and you'd import it into Quicken, and then you'd have duplicates, and oh my goodness, it was a mess. Mint just solves all of that. It's secure and it's safe, but I have noticed what you noticed, Benny, that sometimes Mint's notifications come in late. I'm not sure why that is. Probably has something to do with the back end. The way they do this, of course, is they have a back-end server that gets all this information, updates your data, and maybe it's just not doing it in a prompt fashion. Maybe it couldn't get to the bank in time, but for whatever reason. Yeah, it's not unusual. I still like it. I think it's a good service. If you want to keep track, if you want to budget, it's nice to have that, and it gives you a dashboard you can use on your phone or your tablet or your desktop. So I like Mint, MINT.com. It is secure. It's safe. You don't have to worry about that. More calls still to come, 8888-ASK-LEO. And you know what? A special visit from the Giz Whiz in just a few minutes. Dick DiBartolo will join us. Stay right here. I was going to play this for one of our 4th of July parties till somebody said, listen to the lyrics. It's not, it's not I like American women. It's I don't like American women. Leo Laporte, American woman, stay away from me. I don't... Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is that you? Did you discover that sometimes, Heather, that you've been listening to songs for years and never really knew what they were about, and then you listen to the lyrics and you went, oh, my goodness.
Well, similar would be Born in the
Born
USA.
Born in the USA. Yeah. It sounds like a patriotic song until you listen to the lyrics. 8888, Ask Leo. Dr. Mom says, that's because American women are dynamic and self-assured. And I agree with you, Dr. Mom. I agree with you. Carol in Solvang, where Anderson, is that where Anderson Pea Soup is?
Yes, it is.
The Danish, it's
Bulten,
a...
Bulten.
It's a, but Solvang is this beautiful little Danish city.
Yes.
I love Solvang.
My son and I were up to visit you last summer.
Oh, nice to talk to you again.
You were in your office, yeah.
Well, hello, Carol.
So, I've been listening to you a lot of years, and so
Thank
I know
you.
You're the perfect person to ask about phones.
Oh, yes. I spent a lot of time.
I'm ready to upgrade my phone.
All right.
My question is I bought a new HP Chromebook, 14-inch, and I love it.
Do you? Great. Yeah, I love them, too.
It's so fantastic. I've been an iPhone user for about, I've had the last three iPhones, I think. I originally started with Android phone. When they very first came out, I had an HTC something.
Yeah. I wasn't crazy about the early Android phones.
I had so many problems. There were so many bugs.
Yeah.
I was constantly factory resetting it like three times because I downloaded an app and it would crash the phone.
Yep.
I got tired of it. I went to an iPhone. Perfectly happy.
Good.
I've had the last three iPhones, but now I think I want to go back to Android.
Why,
Carol? They've come a long way.
Well, they have. when Android first came out, it was really an attempt to kind of copy, I think, and certainly Steve Jobs thought this, he sued them, to copy Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Android phones were very disappointing. In fact, I had that. Yeah. The HTC that you had, I think, was the first Android
it
phone.
It was. Like, I was so excited to get it. It was the first
one. Yeah, me too. And it wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't.
But you're right. They've come a long way, baby.
And I heard that you can unlock your Chromebook if you have an Android phone.
Yeah, if you have Lollipop, the latest version of Android, Android 5.0,
mm-hmm.
you bind it to your Chromebook via Bluetooth. You know, you pair them, and then you don't have to type your password anymore.
Right?
Isn't that nice?
And I was looking at the new Android phones, and I was originally considering the Samsung Galaxy 6.
I like that phone a lot.
But then I saw the Motorola Droid Turbo.
I like that phone a lot.
Have you tried that phone at all?
I have it.
It's too good to be true.
Well, it doesn't give you all the battery life they promise.
People are saying 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, no. It's about the same. I like the Droid Turbo.
And it's only 1 megapixel camera.
What I don't like about the Droid Turbo is it's very Verizonized.
Uh-huh.
Verizon likes to put a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah.
But it is essentially a Moto phone in the sense that it has the it's always listening. You can wake it up. You could talk to it.
Right.
So it does some nice things. It isn't exactly pure Android. And I don't think my Droid Turbo is yet a Lollipop. So that would be one concern. If it's not Android 5.0, and mine isn't, I haven't gotten an update yet, then it won't do that nice thing with the Chromebook. So the S6 will. It's 5.0. You should also look at, it may be too big for you, but Google sells a Nexus 6 that is pure Android.
I saw that, too.
That one I like. Now, you want to be on Verizon, though, don't you?
Yeah, I am on Verizon.
Yeah, Verizon doesn't offer the Nexus 6, alas.
Oh, I thought I saw it.
Well, maybe they do. They may have. I shouldn't say that. They didn't initially. Maybe they do now. If they do, and you can go to store.google.com and find out. They sell it directly from there.
Yeah.
Then I think that's a nice choice. It also has one advantage. Google's announced it's going to be a carrier. It's going to do its own thing called Google Fi, F-I. Very affordable.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and that requires a Nexus 6.
But I don't think that's going to be available in our area. Probably not anytime soon.
Well, it uses Sprint and T-Mobile, so you'd have to have Sprint.
Oh, yeah, so that won't work anyway.
Yeah.
But they do have a Nexus 6 on Verizon, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, that's one you should look at. It's awfully big, though. It's a 6-inch screen.
Well, I wanted a big screen. I was originally considering going to the iPhone 6 Plus.
All right.
But
well, it's similar in that.
I want to go to Android because, I think Apple iPhone, it's kind of been sort of at a standstill, I think, for the last. You know, there really isn't that much difference between all the iPhones that I've had.
I've been saying that for a while, that Apple has kind of slowed down its improvements, and Android has started to pass it.
That's what I feel, too. That's
why
I'm kind of tired of being in the same place for so long.
So if you want to stick to Verizon, your choices are a little bit limited, unfortunately. There's also the OnePlus One, and they're going to have the OnePlus Two pretty soon. Those are really great, too.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're not that crazy about the Droid Turbo?
No, it's fine. Don't expect the battery life to be crazy long. It isn't.
What about the camera? It has a 21-megapixel camera.
That actually isn't a very good camera.
It isn't?
No, it's disappointing. It's not as good as the iPhone camera, which is 8.
Really?
Yeah, you know, more megapixels on a camera phone is not necessarily a good thing. It makes the dots on the lens on the pickup small, like a micron.
Oh.
And the smaller the pixel, the lower the quality of the image. So sometimes you can have too many megapixels. I was disappointed with the Droid Turbo camera. I too was excited about it.
Really?
It's not very good. The best cameras.
It's a Nokia Lumia with the 21-megapixel camera, and it takes great pictures.
Yeah, they're doing something different. I'll tell you, the best Android camera phone out there right now, Galaxy S6.
Oh, okay.
Far and away.
That's what I was.
It's gorgeous.
I was worried about the battery life on it, though. But
well, it's not. It is disappointing. It's about 10 hours.
Well, that's probably the same as my iPhone.
It's the same as your old iPhone, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wish the Droid Turbo was a little bit of a disappointment to me because I, too, was hoping for, because it has a big battery on it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a Moto X, but with a big battery and a better camera, except
it's
not.
It charges in 15 minutes. You know?
Yeah, the fast charging is good. S6 does that as well.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, so all the new phones do this, and I think this is their way of compensating for the fact that the battery life is weak, is it can charge very quickly. You can go from 0 to 100% on an S6 or a Turbo, not in 15 minutes, in about an hour and a half. But it's enough so that if you get low, you get home, you plug it in, have dinner. By the time dinner's done, you go back out nightclubbing, because I could tell you're a big clubber there in Solvang.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Go down to the pea soup factory, and it'll be charged up enough for an evening. So in that regard, I think it's okay. And you can also buy, I found one, there's one on one only that I found, AUKEY makes an external battery that does quick charging.
Oh.
So I carry that around with me in my briefcase. So that way I can do quick charging on the plane or on the fly.
Well, I'm glad I asked you about the Droid Turbo then.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I had high hopes.
About it when I saw it. And
I had high hopes, but it's not very good.
I'm glad I didn't get it.
Yeah. I would say you should probably get the Galaxy S6.
Yeah.
I think it's the best. If you're set on Android, I think it's the best Android phone. It's certainly the best Android camera. You'll be,
oh, okay.
You know, in fact, I have a, I'll put this in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Uh-huh. I made an album of video and pictures from the Galaxy S6 Edge, which is the one I have, on my Smug Mug site, leolaporte.smugmug, which is a photo sharing site.com.
Yeah.
And there's a folder there at the bottom called Galaxy S6 Edge. And if you look at it, I think the images that I got from the Galaxy were remarkable.
Is that the same camera as the S6?
Yeah, S6 Edge? S6 Edge are the same camera.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You might also look at, if you want a big screen,
yeah,
and removable battery, the Note 4, which just came out in September, it's still pretty new, that's an excellent choice. But check and see if Verizon's got it updated to Lollipop yet, because mine is not updated yet. And the main reason you said you wanted this is so it would unlock your Chromebook, and you do need Lollipop for that. But I think the Note 4, excellent. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to send you some pro flowers, Dick. Look at these. These are so
some good. Pro flowers?
Pro flowers. You know about pro flowers? Right there.
No. Wow. Oh, I like them.
Isn't that pretty?
I like.
Or I could do these. Look at this. This is. Right. Bamboo. How about for now? I know your mother's passed, but if your mother's still around, and a lot of people's mothers are still around, Mother's Day is coming up in May, you know, not very long, May 10th. Pro Flowers is a special deal for you. One dozen rainbow roses in a free glass vase, just $19.99.
Wow.
And if you want to double the roses, add $10. And I'll tell you, a wife, a mom, a mother would love 24 beautiful rainbow roses from Pro Flowers. Flowers for all occasions from Pro Flowers. Roses, daisies, tulips. I like tulips for the spring. Orchids, if your mom's kind of fancy. Lilies.
Yeah.
And, you know, to send your sweetheart flowers just for no reason is a nice thing. Pro Flowers will do that, too. For Mother's Day, a special offer for fans of Twit. One dozen rainbow roses in a free vase, $19.99 plus shipping. Upgrade to two dozen in a free glass vase for just $10 more. So go to proflowers.com. Click the blue microphone in the top right corner and use the offer code TWIT. Now, May 8th is the last. That's a Friday, the last day you can guarantee delivery for Mother's Day. Don't wait. Don't do what I do, because you know what? I'm putting it off. Proflowers.com. Offer code TWIT. I do send Mom Pro Flowers every year for the last few years. And they had a thing. I don't know. I should see if they still have it. That I really liked. I stretched it out. Like, she got a different thing every day for a few days. Like, one day she got flowers.
Neat.
Yeah, it was so cool.
Nice.
It was like extra love.
Yeah, and then the final day, the bill.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, this was it. This was it. Above and beyond. So I sent her flowers the first day, and the second day she got, like, chocolate-covered strawberries.
Oh, no. Nice.
Like, it was so cool.
Great.
Yeah, I love it. And right now, a special deal when you use the offer code TWIT at proflowers.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Last, we usually do Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer in the gizwiz, every Saturday on this show. But yesterday, there was some sort of technical kerfuffle.
Yes.
And we couldn't get him on the show. And I've got thousands of phone calls, a mailbag worth of letters, all saying...
I'm sorry for making all those calls and sending you all those letters.
Where's my gizwiz? Dick DiBartolo, Mads Madestrader, joins us every week with a gadget of the week. What do you got for us?
Oh, you know what? Close your eyes for a second, because I'm going to give you an audio clue.
Okay. Eyes are, okay. My hands are over my... It's R2-D2.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. You know how...
That I recognize. Yes, definitely exactly. R2-D2. Yeah.
Well, you know, the second trailer aired like 10 days ago and
so
got
excited.
10 million hits like in hours.
Yeah.
So there is a company I think is going to do well producing Star Wars gadgets for the kitchen and for the backyard, like the Star Wars...
Wait a minute.
Lightsaber.
Star Wars gadgets for the kitchen and outdoors?
Yes. That was the Star Wars pizza cutter.
Oh, no! Yes. No!
Yes.
Is this Lucas approved?
You know what? It is, Leo. I said to the guy, O-M-G. What was it like? He said, the licensing deal is very tricky, but... Yeah. And then they have a...
Oh,
barbecue tongs.
Lightsaber barbecue tongs.
Exactly. I know.
The meat is strong in this one.
Yes, exactly. And then the simplest one is an R2-D2 kitchen timer where you just twist his head from 0 to 60 minutes and it, you know, slowly comes back.
These
and
are
then
not
rings
the frozen
like
bees you're looking for. Wow.
Yeah, wow. But I think they're going to do well because I was just astounded by
That's
how many
weird.
Hits that thing got. And it's still far away. You know, it's December.
I know, but we're excited because J.J. Abrams is directing it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And it's going to be episode 7, right? That's so confusing.
Yeah, and it's The Force Begins, I think, right?
The Force Begins, Begin.
Yeah, I've been renaming it The Sales Force Begins.
Because it is with those gadgets.
Exactly.
Holy cow. If you go to Gizwiz, GIZWIZ.BIZ, you'll find Dick's website. You can also find then all the information about the Star Wars doodads if you click the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy. But when you scroll down even a little bit more, you'll see the What the Heck Is It game. A chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for this mustachioed something.
Thing, yeah. Not Star Wars. That's the only hint I'll give you.
That's not Star Wars. All right, so here's the deal.
Yeah, and this is the last week.
12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer, 24 for the cleverest wrong answer. Go to gizwiz.biz. Last chance to do this. At the end of the month, it's all over. And we start all over again. I don't know what it is. I do not. Dick, it's great to see you.
Thank you, sir.
You know, we are doing on Thursday the very last twit version of the Gizwiz, and I will be...
That way there are flowers all over the screen next to my faces.
I know. Yeah. I will be there, though, for that, because I have to say goodbye to you in style.
Okay,
and then
good.
The good news is Dick's going to take the show on the road using a Patreon, which is a really neat service that allows people to kind of get crowdsourced funding to make shows. Patreon.com/Gizwiz. You can find out about the new show and help support it if you're a fan.
Thank you. And I'll be here with you.
You're not leaving the radio show. You better not. God. Counting on that. Or no flowers for you.
No.
Thanks, Dickie D.
Okay, thank
we'll
you,
talk
sir.
Soon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We go back to the phones here. And our next caller is Phil in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for all the good news and resources and coaching over the years.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I'm. You can scold me for not having backed up sufficiently.
Oh, man. You had... What happened?
The hard drive froze on me, and I'm hoping you can recommend a technician or company.
Yeah. So what is the symptom?
It just froze. It just
What does that mean? When you turn on the computer, it doesn't boot up.
The computer was on, and it said hard disk failure.
And then it would not reboot.
It wouldn't reboot.
Yeah. Well, there are two kinds of hard disk failures. There's hardware failures, physical failures, and soft failures. A soft failure is the easiest to fix, and oftentimes. It's as simple as taking that hard drive and putting it in another computer that can boot. Is it a laptop?
No.
It's a desktop. So you could even get a new hard drive, put Windows on it, boot it up, and have that second hard drive in there as the D drive. And you might be able to examine it and say, oh, look, here's all my stuff, and copy it off. That would be the best case scenario. But it also could be that it's not readable at all. In fact, I suspect that's what you're going to find. And that could be, again, merely that the hard drive data, you know, got a little bit scrambled up. And software tools can be used to recover that if you know what you're doing. You got to be careful if you're going to do that, though, because it's easy to use a software tool to in an attempt to recover the data and make it worse. So if you're not skilled at that, if you're, you know, take it to a technician. Yeah, take it to any good computer technician can do, you know, they'll run SpinRite on it to recover any bad sectors, and then they'll run another tool to rebuild the partition table and the file allocation table, that kind of thing. That's all done in software. Now, the failure you're describing could be a hardware failure. For instance, you know, if you look at a hard drive, there's a circuit board on top of it. If that fails, the hard drive can't be read. All the data is still there. It's just the circuit board's gone bad. Or it could be the bearings froze up and the hard drive stopped moving. Those kinds of data errors are much more expensive to fix because now you need to find somebody who can replace that circuit board with an identical circuit board. Or worse, if the bearings froze, literally open up the hard drive, take the platters out, put them in an identical enclosure, spin it up, and take the data off. And that has to be done in a clean room environment because any dust, any contamination can damage the drive. So all of that can cost thousands of dollars. There's a company in Novato, California, just down the road a bit from here that a lot of people use, I like. It's called Drive Savers. I don't have any relationship with them except that I've used them. Never got any free service from them, but they're good. Drivesavers.com. Very expensive. This could be $2,000 or $3,000 if it's a physical failure of the hard drive. It could be very expensive. But you can at least talk to them, and they may have some solutions for you. I would probably take it to a – if you could find a smart computer guy, good luck on that. It seems like there should be a store in every town where there's a person who knows what they're doing, who charges fair and reasonable prices, who can fix it. For some reason, there are people who claim to do that. For some reason, finding that person is hard. It's kind of like a shade tree mechanic. Do any of those exist anymore? So I guess you could go down to your Best Buy and use the Geek Squad. I've had mixed results with that. If you have a Staples or a computer store that has a tech department, and hope you get the smart guy. He can take a look at it, and he'll be able to tell you almost right away if it's a soft failure, something easily fixed, or a hard failure. They're not going to be able to do the hard fix. You got to go to somebody like Drive Savers to do that. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. But we're out of time, so don't call me now. Hey, I'm letting Heather go. So I mean, she'll be back next week, but I'm letting her go for the weekend. So come back next week and call that number. Thank you, Heather Hammond. Thanks to our musical director, Nathan Staten. But most importantly, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next week. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.